Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Stephanie, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Connect Education Workshop update on glioblastoma. And today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations, as well as many other brain tumor organizations, including N-Brain Cancer Initiative, Chris Elliott's Fund, Brain Tumor Foundation, and the National Brain Tumor Society. We really want to thank all of these collaborating organizations for their work with us and making this program possible. And I also want to thank all of you for your interest in the program today. And because of all of this, we have over 595 participants on the call today who come from all of the United States. And we have international participants from Australia, Canada, China, India, Italy, Monaco, Switzerland, and the United Kingdom. So really from all over the world. And it's really a credit to all of you that you're choosing to spend the next hour with us. Now, today's program has been supported by AbbVie, and I really want to thank them for their support of this program today. We have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Jeffrey Bruce. And Dr. Bruce is Edgar M. Houspian, Professor of Neurological Surgery, Vice Chairman, Department of Neurosurgery, Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons, Co-Director, Brain Tumor Center, Director, Bartoli Brain Tumor Research Laboratory. And Dr. Bruce is going to be addressing an overview of glioblastoma, current standard of care, communicating with your healthcare team about quality of life concerns, the important role of clinical trials, how research contributes to your treatment options, and novel treatment approaches. It's now my pleasure to turn this program over to Dr. Bruce.
Thank you, Carolyn. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm delighted to be here on behalf of Cancer Care. Cancer Care is a wonderful organization, and I've been associated with it for many years. And this organization has been very helpful for many patients and their families. They provide a great service by educating and providing support for those of you who are suffering from brain tumors. Now, this is an exciting time to be in the brain tumor field, as there are many new advances in the treatment and diagnosis of glioblastoma. There are actually more scientists working on brain tumors now than at any time in our history. Glioblastomas are what is known as a primary brain tumor. That is, it's a tumor that actually begins in the brain and grows from within it. Now, this is distinct from metastatic brain tumors, which are tumors that have spread from elsewhere into the body, elsewhere in the body into the brain. Mostly what we're going to be talking about today are the primary brain tumors or glioblastomas. Now, glioblastomas are malignant brain tumors, and that means they can spread to other parts of the brain or spinal cord, but they rarely spread to other parts of the body. They rarely metastasize, and that is, you know, that's one of the features about them that make it easier to plan treatments. They are invasive tumors, so most of the treatment is designed to control the tumor at the location in the brain where it begins. And although there are researchers who are trying to determine what causes brain tumors, at this point no one truly knows. It's clear that nothing you did caused your brain tumor, and there was nothing you could have done to prevent it. There's been work done on all kinds of things, from cell phones to different kinds of toxin exposure. And despite a lot of what you've read in the popular press, the reality is scientifically nobody has really been able to prove that. So could it be true? I suppose anything is possible, but it really has not been proven. Now, glioblastomas are diagnosed when patients develop any of a number of symptoms, including headaches, seizures, weakness, balance problems, speech difficulties. They're usually diagnosed with an MRI scan. And the current standard of care relies on surgery, followed by 6 weeks of radiation, and then chemotherapy with a drug called Temodar. In the treatment of glioblastoma, the goal of surgery is to try and remove as much tumor as possible. Now, depending on where the tumor is located, a surgeon may be able to remove most of it or only a small portion of it. In some cases, only a biopsy, only a limited removal may be reasonable. The problem with these tumors is that they invade into the normal brain, so it's not possible to completely remove them. There are a variety of techniques and tools that make surgery safer than ever. And surgery accomplishes two goals. One is to remove some of the mass effect or pressure on the brain that is causing the problems, and the other is to provide tissue to give the pathologist so that he or she can make the diagnosis. Now, many patients are on steroids after the surgery to try and reduce the amount of swelling. And these can have certain side effects, including increased appetite, weight gain, acne, mood changes, stomach irritation, and difficulty sleeping. Seizure medications or anticonvulsants are medications to prevent seizures. Not everyone needs this medication, but those that do benefit from preventing the seizures, and these can have side effects like allergies or dizziness or fatigue. Now, once the surgery is complete and the patient has recovered, he or she will undergo 30 treatments of radiation therapy. This is generally given Monday through Friday for 6 weeks. It's generally painless, and the patient comes in every day and for about 10 or 15 minutes a day goes into the radiation machine and gets the radiation. It's generally painless, but some of the side effects can include hair loss or tiredness, skin irritation, and these usually all get better with time. Once the radiation is finished, most of these things will improve. Now, chemotherapy is part of the treatment as well. The standard chemotherapy is a drug called temozolomide, otherwise known as Temodar. And this drug has been shown to be effective at slowing down the growth of the tumor. It's sometimes given during the radiation and sometimes given after the radiation. It may not make a difference when it's given, and that's why different doctors have different opinions on when the best time to give it may be. In any event, it is effective in any manner that it's given. So just to sort of recap then, surgery, radiation, and Temodar are the current standards of care. That is, pretty much anybody who has a diagnosis of glioblastoma can expect surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy with Temodar. Now, this is the standard treatment. Once you have a standard treatment, you will be monitored frequently with MRI scans and periodic visits, and the goal is to delay the return of this tumor for as long as possible. But many of these tumors will invariably grow back. And when a tumor grows back after you've had the standard treatment, then the options for treatment at that point become one of the many different novel and experimental treatments that are being studied. Now, we recently had a meeting of the American Society of Clinical Oncology. This is otherwise known as ASCO, where the latest cancer treatments, including brain tumor treatments, were highlighted. In fact, we gave a cancer care teleconference earlier this month discussing all of these new findings. And so I can begin to summarize some of those new and exciting areas of novel treatments. There are really a variety of novel treatment approaches. The ones that people are most familiar with are different types of chemotherapy. There are many new drugs that are being developed all the time that are designed to target the growth of brain tumors. Some of these are drugs that have worked against other types of tumors and are being tried in brain tumors. Other types of drugs are those drugs that are designed specifically for brain tumors. And some of the novel treatment approaches include ways to change the chemotherapy or alter it so that it gets better penetration into the brain. We know that The brain is designed to protect itself. So the blood vessels in the brain are designed so that makes it difficult for drugs to get into the brain. And so the same thing with chemotherapy. It's difficult for chemotherapy to get into the brain. So many of the new research and new treatments are designed to alter the chemotherapy so that it gets into the brain and penetrates it better. Also, many of these drugs are designed to have less side effects and to be more effective at killing tumor cells. That is to be more efficient at in the manner on how the tumor cells are killed, and to avoid a lot of the side effects that we commonly associate with chemotherapy. With advances in molecular biology techniques, so basic science techniques, scientists have been able to get a much better handle on all of the different molecular and genetic analysis of individual tumors. And that is, there are all kinds of tools now to investigate the molecular and biochemical changes that happen in tumors. And if you analyze how tumor cells are different from brain cells, by exploiting that difference, you can find new ways to treat brain tumors by targeting those parts of the tumor that are different from the normal brain. And these new advances in molecular and genetic analysis has led to a lot of excitement in the research field. And because every patient's tumor is different, and because you can analyze these different molecular and genetic changes, this holds out the possibility of what is called personalized therapy. That's something you may have actually heard about. And the idea is that scientists can analyze a given tumor and determine what parts of the tumor that are causing the growth are different from other people's tumors. And with that in mind, it may be possible to develop special drugs that target these individual problems and a given person's tumor. Now, this work is very preliminary, and it has not been developed to the point where it can be mass-produced for every individual, but that is hopefully something on the horizon, because what we can do is actually, in any given patient, we can investigate these different treatments. And hopefully over time, we'll be able to do this on a wholesale basis so that within a very short amount of time, perhaps a couple of days or so, a patient's tumor can be analyzed and new targets discovered and new treatments designed specifically for that patient. So it looks like it's in the realm of possibilities going into the future, but it's not quite here yet, but every reason to think that that will happen over time. Now, there are other types of drugs that are designed to target different aspects of the brain tumor. For instance, there are drugs that are designed to attack the blood vessels in the brain or to block invasion of the tumor into the brain. There are also a number of very promising drugs that will be discussed later in this hour that involve immunotherapy and those drugs that boost the immune system. These are often given in combination with other immunotherapies such as vaccines. Finally, there are some new developments in everything from gene therapy and the use of viruses to attack certain parts of the tumor. These treatments are part of a trend known as biological therapies, where these specialized viruses or bacteria or products from them can be used to kill cancer cells. These sophisticated treatments have been worked out in research laboratories for many years and are just getting into the clinic now. They are holding out a lot of hope because they represent entirely new approaches to treatment. As I mentioned earlier, this has never been a better time for brain tumor research. There are many exciting new trials that are being carried out, and it's not clear which of these will turn out to be the best treatment. Those of you who have glioblastoma and have already had standard treatment realize that there's no proven treatment beyond that. The hope is that these clinical trials will discover the best new treatments possible. Therefore, I strongly urge all of you to be involved in clinical trials, not only for the obvious reason that you might find a new treatment that will dramatically improve your condition, but also because it will help other people that develop brain tumors in the future. Furthermore, clinical trials are run by the best people in neuro-oncology. These are the most dedicated and hardworking physicians in the brain tumor field. Having them as part of your team will provide the highest level of care, regardless of whether or not you're actually enrolled in the clinical or experimental protocol. Finally, I wanted to end by talking about communicating with your healthcare team. It goes without saying that you should seek out the most reputable specialists in brain tumor treatments. These individuals are easily found over the internet or by having discussion with your primary care doctor or friends and family. Also, groups like Cancer Care can steer you in the right direction. Once you're diagnosed with a brain tumor, you may hear all kinds of stories and anecdotes about friends and relatives who have had tumors. You should be careful and skeptical of these anecdotes, as they may not really apply the same way to your condition. Everybody's tumor is different, and everybody's tumor is different as well from everybody else's. So second opinions are useful, and if you have some doubts about your current doctor, it's reasonable to go ahead and get a second opinion. That second opinion can reinforce what you already know and provide some comfort and knowledge that you are doing the right thing. It's important to have control over your lifestyle, given the inconveniences of seeing doctors and getting notes and treatments. Keeping a notebook or using your smartphone to jot down notes and reminders will help you to make sure that you're not overwhelmed in dealing with your condition. It's important to work with your healthcare team and friends and family so that you can maintain the highest quality of life possible. This is very doable. Just because you have a brain tumor, no one is saying that you can't visit a mall. No one's saying you can't enjoy your birthday party. No one's saying you can't have a nice meal. No one's saying you can't see a good movie. It's important to continue to live your life to the highest degree possible, despite any diagnosis or side effects that you may be suffering. This is by far the best way to cope with your tumor. I'm going to stop here, and I'm happy to turn the program over to Carolyn and to Dr. Eric Wong. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Bruce. That was really excellent, really outstanding overview of where we are today in treating glioblastoma, and really just a lot of the excitement that we hear in your voice and in your words about the treatment and in terms of clinical trials and research. So thank you very much. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Eric Wong. Dr. Wong is Associate Professor, Harvard Medical School, Director of the Neuro-Oncology Unit, Co-Director, Brain Tumor Center, Department of Neurology, Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Dr. Wong is going to be discussing immunotherapy, electric field treatments. He's also going to be addressing managing symptoms and treatment side effects and the role of rehabilitation medicine. It's really my pleasure now to bring to all of you and to Dr. Wong. He will now discuss these topics. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Meissner. So, everyone, thank you for being here at Cancer Care, and I think Cancer Care is doing a very excellent service for brain tumor patients so that they can get the latest information as well as how to manage some of their symptoms and treatment side effects. And so I'm going to talk about two of the most exciting treatments that are currently going on. Some are still investigational, but some are FDA approved. Okay. So the first one that I'm going to talk about is immune therapy. So basically, immune therapy is divided into two major types, passive and active. So this is what I mean in terms of passive immunotherapy. The glioblastoma, according to the current thinking, is a tumor that is built up over time, and the tumor has developed strategies to suppress the patient's immune system so that they don't bother the tumor. And passive immune therapies are ways to remove this immunosuppression. And there are two types. One involves small molecules that, and they are commonly known as IBO inhibitors. But these small molecules, they are at very early stages of investigation at this time. The antibodies are more advanced, and right now there are three monoclonal antibodies that are FDA approved, not in glioblastoma, but in other disease types. But they are being actively investigated in glioblastoma. The first one is called ipilimumab, or IPI for short, and the second one is called pembrolizumab, pembro for short, and the last one is called nivolumab. NEVO for short. So these three types of antibodies are potentially have an effect on the glioblastoma, and they are actively being investigated. And there are actually phase three clinical trials that are currently going on that involve any one of these drugs or even a combination of two drugs. And they work by removing the immune suppression that are imposed on the patient's immune system by the tumor. Now, this is not without side effects, and some of the side effects involve skin rash, inflammation of the lungs, inflammation of the colon, inflammation of the liver, as well as inflammation of the pituitary gland. But they can be managed effectively with steroids. And then the second category of immune therapy are the active immune therapies, and they are and they have names such as ICT-107 or epidermal growth factor receptor B3, and these are tumor peptides that can potentially trigger the immune system to attack the glioblastoma. The ICT-107 is currently in phase three clinical trial. The EGFR-3, it is also currently in clinical trial. There's another type of active immune therapy, and that is called DC-VAX. And DC-VAX is a type of immune therapy that is personalized to the patient. So, and it involves taking out the tumor and then making a specialized patient-specific vaccine against the tumor. So it is currently in phase three clinical trial, and the result is waiting to come out at this time. The second category of new treatment that is emerging is the electric field treatment. And the rationale behind this type of treatment is that the alternating electric field disrupts tumor cell division, which is, in my opinion, a fundamental process for a tumor to grow. So it has been shown so far in early analysis that in phase three clinical trials that when electric fields added to chemotherapy work better than chemotherapy alone. So as everyone knows, patients with newly diagnosed glioblastoma, they receive daily temozolomide plus radiation. But after that, after radiation is done, the patients would receive chemotherapy on a monthly fashion. So electric field treatment can be added to that. And the electric field treatment has been approved by the Food and Drug Administration for the treatment of recurrent glioblastoma as well as newly diagnosed glioblastoma. Some of the things that can potentially improve the chance of the electric field treatment controlling the tumors are making sure that they apply more than 75% of the time, because these electric field treatments are on whenever they are applied and off when they are not applied. And patients wear these arrays on their head, and they carry an electric field generator. In addition, patients should avoid dexamethasone if at all possible, because this is the class of medications that can work, that can counteract immune therapy as well as electric field treatment. The side effects include scalp rash and sometimes can be severe, and but they are treatable with steroid applied to the scalp. I would like to talk a little bit about the symptom management and side effects that are experienced by pain tumor patients, particularly glioblastoma patients, and they are basically consist of two major categories. Side effects that are primarily neurological, and side effects that are involve the rest of the body. So neurological side effects include cognitive problems, motor problems, sensory problems, and autonomic problems. But these problems are typically, at least initially, depends on the location of the tumor. Over time, these problems may spread to other areas of the brain. The goal is to maximize patient's function and minimize the potential side effects. I just want to point out that radiation, when it's applied to the brain, radiation is typically applied to just at the tumor area. However, some of the radiation may involve parts of the brain that do not have apparent tumor involvement on MRI scan. But nevertheless, if the tumor is controlled later on, patients may develop neurological issues. There are ways of that. For example, patients with attentional problems, we typically use a drug called methylphenidate or Ritalin to increase their attention. That will improve their short-term memory. Patients can function better. We actually place quite a number of patients on methylphenidate. The side effects include it can potentially cause heart arrhythmias as well as potentially seizures, but a lot of our patients are on anti-seizure medications to begin with, so they should be safe. The second category of side effects are primarily involving the systemic body. One of the most common ones is clots in the legs or clots in the lungs, and that is frequently from immobility. So it is very important for patients to be active. Sometimes that may not be possible, but even when patients have issues with motor problems, physical therapy or family members may want to help the patients to mobilize their extremities. And sometimes when patients are receiving radiation, they may feel fatigued, and patients may want to rest more. I usually tell patients be active as much as they can, and potentially look for side effects. Because when there are clots, we have to anticoagulate the patient. We have to give them blood thinners, and that just adds another layer of complexity in their management. There's a drug that is typically used, the dexamethasone. The dexamethasone can cause muscle weakness, and patients should minimize the amount of dexamethasone that is being used, just enough in order to carry out their activities of daily living, and also to prevent side effects caused by dexamethasone. I would like to add a couple points about rehabilitation medicine. Patients should benefit from physical therapy and as well as cognitive therapy, because patients with glioblastoma, the tumor is in the brain, and we really need need to strengthen some of the connections within the brain. So what patients can do is that they can play cognitive games such as a variety of games like Sudoku, play board games, as well as doing crossword puzzles. Exercise is good. Patients need to have good nutrition in order to maintain a healthy state, particularly when they are getting chemotherapy, as well as some of the medications to control side effects associated with the tumor. Exercise, as I mentioned, is a way to prevent muscle atrophy as well as to prevent clots among the patients. So I just want to reiterate what Dr. Bruce said. The tumor and also the patient's disability should not prevent you to do the activities that you would like to do. We just need to find ways around it, either with medications to maximize your brain function and neurological function, as well as to control the tumor. And on the other hand, we need to prevent neurological decline, as well as try to control side effects. So I would like to turn the stage over back to Dr. Carolyn Messler, and I will be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Wong. That was really very informative. And I think both you and Dr. Bruce are really consistent in giving the message to everyone that we really would like people to maintain their quality of life and to get on with the momentum of one's life. So we're going to that's really an important message, and I really appreciate that. It's important for everyone to hear that. And our next speaker is Mr. Andrew Chesler. Mr. Chesler is an oncology social worker here at Cancer Care. And Mr. Chesler is going to address the free psychosocial services and programs that Cancer Care offers, as well as the role of support groups. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Mr. Chesler.
Thank you, Carolyn. It's a pleasure to be part of this call today. I'd like to start by speaking about the importance of creating a support network when you're diagnosed with glioblastoma and how Cancer Care can be part of that network. There are several ways that we can help. Cancer Care is a national not-for-profit organization that provides free professional support services to anyone affected by cancer. Cancer Care programs include individual counseling, support groups, education about resources and how to navigate the healthcare system, practical help, and some limited financial assistance, including copay assistance for chemotherapy for glioblastoma. All of our services are delivered by master's level oncology social workers and are completely free of charge. Oncology social workers are trained in how a diagnosis of cancer affects a person and his or her family and friends. And we are experienced in helping people to manage the emotional, the physical, and the financial challenges that arise after a diagnosis. Adjusting to and dealing with the diagnosis is an important part of the healing process. Asking for help by joining a support group or by contacting a social worker for counseling is a sign of strength. Cancer Care offers face-to-face groups in our local offices in the New York area, but also telephone and online groups that are available nationwide. These groups offer a unique opportunity to connect with other people impacted by glioblastoma, along with the help of a Cancer Care social worker to facilitate the group. Sharing information and understanding with others in similar situations can be a very powerful experience. Group members can offer encouragement and a sense of community that can provide you with additional support and guidance. These connections help lessen the isolation that many people with cancer may experience. As we have learned today from Dr. Bruce and Dr. Wong, there's a lot of information to digest and to make sense of. Our social workers can help you understand what this all means for you and your family. A Cancer Care social worker can help you prioritize and consider the questions that you might want to ask to get the answers and the information that you need. Please remember that you're not alone. Cancer Care services are here to help you. So please contact us at our 800 number, that's 800 813-HOPE. That's 813-800-813-4673. Or log on to our website at cancercare.org for more information about our oncology social work support. Thank you for your attention and the opportunity to talk to you today.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chesler. That was excellent. And now we have time for questions. I want to really thank all of our speakers for really staying within all the time frames, because we now have lots of time for questions. And I'm going to ask Stephanie to bring all of our speakers on board and also to explain to all of you how to queue up and ask questions. Stephanie, if you could explain to everybody how to queue up for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question. Again, to ask a question, please press star then one at this time.
And we do have a question actually from one of our we have a question from two of our online participants. The first one is, I'm going to give this one to Dr. Bruce, if you could address this one. What three trials are you currently most excited about for recurrent GBM?
Well, you know, it's hard to pick one specific trial, because keep in mind that these are all experimental at this stage, so we don't know which ones are going to work out the best. I have a little bit of a bias towards all of the immunotherapy trials. I like the vaccine trials in particular. We're part of the heat shock protein vaccine, and there's some other vaccine protocols as well. So I like the immunotherapies and the vaccines, because I think they're a nice way of having the patient's own body, their own immune system, work against the tumor. And since every tumor is different, it seems to me logical to have a treatment that is designed to take advantage of those differences in individual tumors. So I like the vaccine treatments.
Excellent. And another question, actually, I'm going to give this to Dr. Wong, from Kunal. Is infection by bacteria something you would recommend for grade 4 GBM? Is this something that you're familiar with, and could you comment on this?
Okay. So this is along the line of immune therapy. Infection by bacteria, it was actually a concept that was found at the beginning of last century in the 1900s by a certain name, Dr. Cooley. And he actually made a type of immune therapy called Cooley's toxin that has shown some efficacy, but it really is a hit or miss type of benefits, because at that time his understanding of the immune system was not as extensive as what we are doing now. However, how to manipulate the innate immune system to work against the tumor, I think it is still in the experimental stage. I'm not a proponent for using bacteria to trigger the innate immune system, because bacteria have in itself have a can potentially cause meningitis and encephalitis. So I would stick with whatever that the immune therapies that are available in clinicaltrials.gov and talk to reputable brain tumor docs like Dr. Bruce or any individuals at CancerCare.
Thank you. We have another question here from another one of our online participants, from Libby. And this is actually, Andrew, if you could address this, Mr. Chesler, are there specific psychological side effects that are common to cancer patients, just the whole psychosocial issues of living with cancer, some of the challenges that people face? If you could say a few words about that, Mr. Chesler.
Okay, sure. Cancer diagnoses can potentially affect not just the patient, the person diagnosed, but the entire family. And the stress of that can manifest itself in what feels like changed relationships. People may feel angry, and wonder why they are diagnosed with cancer, why they have cancer. So there are sometimes feelings of anxiety, anger, and these can be best addressed really by support. Calling one of our social workers certainly would be a way to go. Remembering that while you may be diagnosed with cancer, you're still the same person in many ways that you've always been, and it's important to maintain your life as much as possible in the way that you always have. We find that people sometimes feel a lot of isolation, and it's important to mitigate that by, of course, not being isolated, by reaching out to other people and finding support not just from the people that you already know, but it can be helpful to have an objective person, a social worker, a counselor of some sort, that you feel comfortable saying whatever it is that's on your mind to. So things like stress, anxiety, and anger sometimes, I would say, are very common to cancer patients.
Excellent. Thank you. So actually, there are lots of different emotions that people can have, and we definitely recommend that you call our social workers here at Cancer Care and talk to them about some of the concerns that you might have. It's really very helpful to do that, as well as talking to your healthcare team, of course, as well. Now, we have a question from one of our telephone participants. I'm going to ask Stephanie if she could, if we could hear from that person's question as well.
Our question comes from Tim N. Your line is open.
Hello?
Hello, yes. Hi.
Hi. My question was, where are the survivors, the long-term survivors that are long-term out? I'm in the Northeast, and all the cancer centers say they don't have any long-term out survivors. So I'm wondering where they are and if anyone are speaking to them to see what their treatments were.
Excellent question. Dr. Bruce, could you address that question in a general way?
Yeah. I don't think there are long-term survivors that are in any one region of the country. I think any of us who have treated a large number of patients have a small but impressive group of patients who have gone on for 5 years, 7 years, 8 years, even longer. I mean, we're following a number of those people. And there actually is a multi-center study that involves several institutions, including ours, where we actually are combining all of our long-term study patients and trying to analyze them to see if there are any molecular changes or genetic changes or the results of any specific treatments that may tell us why these patients have done so well over time. I can tell you just by a very preliminary look at some of those data, we don't really have a good handle on that other than to say invariably you'll find that those patients who have survived the longest are those who were treated very aggressively. That is, patients who got the standard treatment up front and then were involved in any number of different treatment protocols. So it's a very provocative, very interesting question. We're looking at it. I would just say the answer is not simple.
Excellent. Thank you for that question, and thank you for that excellent answer. Thank you. So there's studies going on, research, and you'll be hearing more about this. And we now have another telephone question. Is that correct, Stephanie?
Yes, our next question comes from Pamela G. Your line is open.
Hi. My question has to do with finding resources to help with some of the deficits, cognitive functioning deficits. So how can a patient find OT, PT, or neuropsych, or similar kind of services that are going to be particularly effective?
And before you, if you could just say, is your family member being treated at a comprehensive cancer center or at a in a doctor's office, or is it at a major medical center with all those services available?
So I'm actually a healthcare worker, and I navigate brain cancer patients, and I'm new to the field. So I'm in an academic affiliated center, but I'm sure there are people on the call who don't have ready access to PTOT. But I think just being, my question has to do with how to be discerning enough about what that PT, the training that a PT or OT would have, or if neuropsych is available, kind of what to look for.
Okay. Excellent. I'm going to ask Dr. Bruce if you could just address this in terms of what's available at your institution, and then Dr. Wong, if you could also address the availability of these services at your institution. Also, its availability, both of you are at comprehensive cancer centers, if you could say a word about what those centers are and how they're available also to people in the community who might be in that state but maybe not close by in terms of being able to call in and just ask for those kinds of assistance locally and regionally. So, Dr.
Yeah.
Bruce, could you go first?
Well, since as a surgeon, nearly all of the patients I treat are in the hospital at one point or another, and so we have a very comprehensive team of social workers with whom we work hand-in-hand with, as well as the rehab doctors and physical therapists. So pretty much every patient before they're discharged from the hospital has a plan set up either locally where they are or here at our own institution, Columbia. So pretty much every major medical institution has a wide variety of all of those services, whether it's physical therapy, rehab, or cognitive functioning. It gets a little trickier once they leave the hospital and are being treated in a private doctor's office, or if they don't really have an affiliation with any particular medical center or any doctor. Perhaps I'll leave it to the others on the phone call to maybe answer that question better, since they may have a better understanding of how to get those services.
Excellent. And Dr. Wong, do you want to comment on that as well?
Sure, I can certainly add to that. I also work in a very large medical center in which there are multiple services available. Now, I just want to point out that there's no specialized training for physical therapists and occupational therapists for brain tumor patients. There's no such certification. However, I think the starting point should be with a neurologist or a neuro-oncologist, and a neurologist who specializes in taking care of brain tumor patients to help guide these patients, because neurologists are probably more familiar with these varying services. For example, neuropsychologists who can perform cognitive testing to determine whether or not patient would be a good candidate for methylphenidate treatment to improve their attention and improve their short-term memory. They can also help coordinate with physical therapists and occupational therapists for motor problems or swallowing problems, as well as other cognitive issues. At my hospital, we have a special program called the Brain Fit Club, in which a group of neurobehavioral neurologists who actually help develop programs to do cognitive rehabilitation, not only for brain tumor patients, but also for patients with other neurological diseases such as Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease, but they can be useful. So, for example, there's a computer program that patients can log on to do cognitive games. And it has been shown, at least in the Alzheimer's world, that by doing these cognitive games, it can improve patients' cognitive skills. So the bottom line, in my opinion, is to go to large medical centers, speak to neurologists, neuro-oncologists, or since you are a healthcare provider, you may want to take a spend a month or do a sabbatical or do a rotation at those facilities in order to get a feel of what type of cognitive physical therapy and occupational therapies are available there.
That's an excellent model, what you're describing, actually, Dr. Wong, and I think that indeed there are wonderful people out there who can assist both with helping with cognitive issues, and they may not, as you point out, may not be specific to people with brain tumors, but the deficits that people experience, the problems that people may be running into in terms of short-term memory can be enormously helped by people who have that expertise. So it is important to get your referral bases often from these large academic centers, as opposed to just trying on your own to find someone. I also would recommend, and I'm going to ask Mr. Chesler to comment on this as well, but actually when you're in doubt in terms of what to do, that you certainly can call Cancer Care. We have a very active program both for people living with glioblastomas as well as for their caregivers in terms of helping them to navigate these types of services. Mr. Chesler, if you could comment on just our whole caregiving program as well, because these issues affect both the person living with the glioblastoma and, as Mr. Chesler pointed out, their caregivers as well.
Sure. So we have individual counseling with social workers. It's helpful for the caregiver to have a place to discuss these things and to discover resources, which is something that we can help with. Of course, as social workers, we suggest that anyone contact the social work department at the hospital that the patient is receiving treatment at local resources. Most hospitals have very comprehensive programs. But again, we can certainly help the caregiver, the person who is involved with the patient in finding resources, and suggest calling us by all means to look for this sort of help and to learn from others in support groups. That can be very helpful, what experiences of others have had, and to share resources with other families or patients, that can be a huge resource as well.
Excellent points, and actually that's very good that they often, you know, it's often caregivers who may notice things too sometimes, and it's really helpful for them, I think, as Mr. Chesler points out, to really, they often can do some of that help in terms of finding those resources, working with the medical team, very important getting those kind of resources together. So, and also, I think Mr. Chesler pointed out about that point in the beginning, and the importance of a social network or a network, and that network can include Cancer Care. And, of course, we did mention all the other brain tumor organizations as well that exist in all of your materials. Those also are resources to go to as well. We want you to feel that you have a host of resources to access. Now, we have another question from one of our online participants, from David. Prior to the tumor recurring, and I'm going to ask Dr. Bruce, if you would address this, prior to the tumor recurring, what can be done to be proactive to inhibit progression other than trials, supplements? Is that something you would want to answer, Dr. Bruce? Or?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. Everybody wants to be proactive against their tumor. I would say this, that there's no known treatment or no known drug that sort of helps on a preventative basis and that has been shown to be effective in preventing something from growing back in the meantime. I would just say as a general advice, it's probably the kind of advice that you hear with anybody who has medical issues, and that is staying as healthy as possible, meaning eat a good diet, exercise regularly, stop smoking, make sure you don't drink too much alcohol. Living a healthy lifestyle is actually the best thing you can do. There's a lot of not only immediate benefit from that, you're just going to feel better, but there is some evidence to suggest that living a healthy lifestyle helps boost your immune system, and if you do happen to get sick later on, it'll help you be in a stronger and better position to combat that.
Excellent. And there is... thank you very much. And there is another question from Teresa. I'm going to ask Dr. Wong if you could address this. There's been a lot of talk recently about using the poliovirus to treat GBM. Is your facility currently participating in the trials? And if so, what is your take on the treatment? So, again, if you could just address this in a general way.
Dr. Meissner. So polio virus, we all received the polio vaccine. So we all have a built-up immunity against the polio virus, okay? So what the I'm referring to when we were children and infants, we received the polio vaccine. So our body has immunity against it, and what the polio vaccine therapy for glioblastoma is to harness that that build up immunity that's already in that person. It is one of the what I previously talked about as active immunotherapy that is one of the strategies. If the caller is interested in learning more about it, they should go into clinicaltrials.gov to find out more information. But that is the rationale behind it. Compared to other therapies, I cannot say whether or not this is better or worse compared to other types of immunotherapy. It is nevertheless investigational at this time.
Excellent. Okay, and then we have another question from Patricia. After 4 months, and this is, I'm going to give this to Dr. Bruce. After 4 months, my husband seems to be responding to an immunotherapy drug for GBM in a phase 2 clinical trial. We hope this will continue. What might happen after the first year on this drug? Now, this is a general, this is a question that's particular to a person, but if you could comment on participating in the phase 2 trial and just, you know, if you can answer this in a general way, and then we hope that Patricia will take this back to our treating healthcare team.
Well, I think the whole idea of a vaccine trial or an immunotherapy is to train the immune system to work against the tumor. And the way the immune system works is that many of the effects of the immune system, when you train it, can be lifelong, just like Dr. Wong talks about your polio virus. When you get vaccinated against the polio virus as a child, it protects you even as an adult. And so that same concept applied to brain tumors is that once immunotherapy is given, you're hoping that the immune system will continue to be supercharged and work against the tumor. So you're hoping that on a long-term basis, the immune system will keep the tumor at check, or keep the tumor in check. So to answer your question, what can you expect in the long term? Well, the thing that you most hope for is that the tumor doesn't grow back. The one good thing about immunotherapies is once you've had the therapy, there seem to be very few side effects. So I don't know that I would necessarily expect any new side effects, or hopefully not, but I think at this point, once the treatment is given and the tumor is stable, you want to just continue with your routine follow-ups every few months and continue to hope that the vaccine is effective against the tumor growing back. So I wouldn't expect to see anything until that possible time when the tumor begins to grow back.
Excellent. And we're going to take one last late-breaking question here from Karen. Doctor, these are wonderful questions. I must say our online participants have been most active. There are many, many questions I know we can't take, but I just want to do this one last question before we soon will conclude the call from Susan, and I'm going to give this call to Dr. Wong. Issue for JBM patient, wait a minute. What about proton beam radiation versus IMRT radiation for glio patients? Could you comment on that, Dr. Wong?
Sure, I can certainly comment on that. The difference between IMRT and proton is that IMRT uses gamma radiation, the conventional type of gamma radiation, while proton therapy uses heavy particles. Now, in terms of patient outcome for glioblastoma, they are pretty much the same, in my opinion. And that is also true for, if I can speak for the radiation oncologists in general. However, if patients have a tumor that is near critical areas of the the central nervous system. So for example, if there is a glioblastoma that's close to the optic nerves, close to the pituitary gland, or close to the brainstem, then we can limit the amount of radiation to these critical structures by using proton beam. Proton beam is another way of administering the radiation. By and large, its efficacy is similar to IMRT, except in special circumstances. So check with your treating neurosurgeon or neuro-oncologist first.
Excellent, thank you. And Dr. Bruce, do you want to comment on this as well?
I think that's a pretty good comprehensive answer.
Okay, excellent. Okay. Well, actually, I want to thank our speakers. All of you have been extraordinary. And I also want to thank our participants today. This has been an extraordinary call. I would say in the history of our doing these programs, which we've been doing them for some time, we have had so many questions from our online participants, just many more than we can possibly take. And so I just want to thank you for the thoughtfulness of your questions, how important they are. So I do want to let you all know that we do want to give you resources as we conclude the call today for having any further questions you may have addressed. So I do want to remind you that this is a one-hour workshop, and then in planning a program like this, it's a one-hour workshop, and we recognize that we can never in 1 hour address all of your concerns, but we can, as the program is about to conclude, give you resources, because we don't want anyone to leave this call feeling like you're alone, and what do I do now with my questions or concerns? So I hope, first of all, this program itself has been helpful to you, but in terms of moving forward, I think Mr. Chesler identified most of the services that Cancer Care offered, many of them, and they are all accessible by calling Cancer Care at 1-800-813-4673 or by visiting our website at www.cancercare.org, just because we have so many international participants on the call as well. However, I also do want to remind all of you that if you have a medical question further about your treatment, and many of you do have those very specific questions, and the information you received today from our speakers, we hope you'll take it back to your treating healthcare team so that they can help them to customize the information you received today to your specific needs and your particular treatment. We often do recommend that people contact the National Cancer Institute if they have any further medical questions, or any of the brain tumor organizations, of course, that are partnering with us on today's program. And for the National Cancer Institute, their toll-free number is 1-800-422-6237, or you can visit them at www.cancer.gov, and that's a wonderful resource. That will be in all your materials that you'll receive from us after today's call. However, most importantly, as we are about to conclude the call, we don't want any one of you to feel you're alone in coping with glioblastoma or cancer, any of your concerns, because we know that there are moments when you feel really very much alone. And we want you to know that you're now very much connected to all the programs that we offer here at Cancer Care, and as a conduit, as a bridge to all the other services that are out there. So we have services here, and if we don't have it, then we are definitely very aware of many of the resources out there. But we do encourage you to use us as your portal. You can contact us, and then our staff will help you, and if for some reason you ask for something we don't have, we will connect you to something. As oncology social workers, our field of practice is really helping people to problem solve. And so whatever your problem is, please do call us, and we will do our very best to help you to come up with a reasonable solution and that you can then get on with all of our speakers' recommendations, really get on with the momentum of your life, which is important to you. That's really the whole point of treatment and the whole excitement now currently about the treatments available for glioblastoma. Now, I want to thank you all for your participation today. I want to wish you all a very fine day, and I have to say that you have been the most remarkable audience and most amazingly informed and really asking such great questions. So thank you all, and thank you all for those who are listening as well. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may now disconnect, and everyone have a wonderful day.